Here's a case where you see theology being done with symbols. And that's what Revelation's doing. Like, how does God work in the world? Lion, fierce. Lamb, vulnerable.
Right.
What do you do with, you're going to get a lion, but you get a lamb?
Yeah. Yeah. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning, Chris.
We have a guest with us today.
Ah, we do.
We're both looking at him. Mm-hmm. Viewer, if since we don't do this by video, I shouldn't say viewer, I should say listener.
Yeah.
Right across from us is Dr., Professor, Pastor.
Not now.
Not now, but was.
Yeah.
Greg Carey from the Lancaster Theological Seminary campus of Moravian University.
Yeah.
I got that right.
Yeah.
All right. Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be with both of you.
So I've got this little website introduction for you. I don't know how recent it was updated.
Not probably at all.
Let's see how it goes. All right. Okay. Here we go. Greg Carey began teaching at Lancaster Theological Seminary in 1999, having previously taught at Rhodes College and Winthrop University. This says he teaches School of Theology courses in New Testament, along with Introduction to Theological Education, Praxis, and Social Change, and research seminars for the MATS and DMIN programs.
Yeah.
I didn't think that had changed.
Yeah, no.
Greg's primary commitment, and I love the way this was worded, by the way. Greg's primary commitment involves preparing students for public leadership, including public interpretation of Scripture.
I wrote that, so I'm glad you liked it.
When I encountered that, it struck me because I always thought of you as a New Testament professor, which you are, but I had not thought of it as public leadership, including public interpretation of Scripture. Just the framing of that was yeah, that's exactly what Greg did.
I think that when you were a student, I hadn't arrived at that language for what I was doing, but it was kind of always there, because when you come to seminary, it's a little different than interpreting the Bible in Sunday school class. You're being authorized to do it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so that authorized interpretation has different kinds of standards and expectations for the way you study and learn, the way you're prepared. So, yeah.
That, and it brought to mind one of the things that I liked about your class. I promise I'm not going to say a lot of things that I liked about your class. One of the things I loved about your class was you had, towards the end of pretty much each session. So, listener, when you go to seminary, one of the things that happens is your brain feels like it's in a blender. And I remember that experience in the first semester especially, because you're taking that intro to biblical interpretation. I had Julie O'Brien for Old Testament. I think I would have had you first, if not first semester, second semester for sure. New mm-hmm. Testament was coming. Mm-hmm. And that world kind of gets you shocked. No matter what type of Christianity you come from, it forces you to rethink and confronts you with new ideas. In your class, it was not so much that. There was plenty of, oh my goodness, I guess I never read this scripture. I guess I yeah, never really read yeah. it. But you would take us deep into the weeds, and then you would always end, I mean, the session would always end with, here's how you apply this. Here's what's going to happen when you're visiting someone at the bedside with this. Or this is why this is so important when you're choosing leaders. Like those kinds of, at the time, I thought of them as pastoral approaches to the scripture, but I didn't think of them as leadership approaches to the scripture, which is exactly what it was.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's funny. I don't know that I haven't gotten to teach the intro New Testament course in a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd kind of forgotten that I did that, but that is true.
You did. And in the Pauline, I remember I took a semester on Paul,
mm-hmm.
and definitely you were doing that because yep. we're struggling with Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times when we're struggling mightily with Paul. But that was part of your effort. I recognize that now. That was part of your efforts. How do you lead with this? How do you use this when you have to make a difficult church decision or you're at the bedside with someone who's dying? How does this apply?
It's very different than when I, for 4 years, taught undergrads, right? Because when you teach undergrads, it's an intellectual question.
Yes.
It's critical thinking. It's an introduction to a field. But especially like in a state university, you're not talking about why it matters for individual life. You might talk about how the Bible gets used in public, you know, how it gets used politically or the way it's been used in arguments over this or that. But, you know, because that helps make it relevant, helps students make connections. But you're not preparing students yeah. to be responsible for it.
Yeah. And that authorizing piece. That I don't know why it took me so long to figure that out, but now I do.
Okay,
now I do.
That's cool.
And then I'm adding here because this has not been updated since you stepped in as an associate dean.
Correct.
Okay. Tell yeah. us about that.
So our Lancaster Seminary 4 years ago started combining with Moravian Theological Seminary, which is part of Moravian University. We're in year 5 of that process now, and we are legally and fully combined. Mm-hmm. So our structure has a dean above me, a real dean. I kind of think of the office. I'm the associate dean in Lancaster.
So not the real dean.
No, I'm not the real dean.
Fair enough.
But I'm responsible for watching stuff that happens in Lancaster, like on the campus. I don't have authority over it, but I'm watching it. And then also I'm responsible for shaping the academic programs and the teaching in the school.
One of the reasons that I came to this seminary, I don't know that I've ever told you this. So I came from Kansas.
Yep.
And this is when I had essentially 2.5 kids. My third kid had just been born.
Okay.
And at that same time, I was sensing what I came to understand, a call to pursue ministry and the route that takes you to seminary,
because
you can go other routes. And there were 3 seminaries on the docket that were Methodist seminaries. And so I looked into all 3 of those, got information back. They would have required me to move no matter what. And then Martha Harris, my mother-in-law, they came down to Kansas from here and came to see the new baby. And she said, now, there's a seminary in my backyard. Would you like to come see it? And so we came to see it. One of the things that really grabbed me about that seminary was the way it engages society and church and society, that interplay, very intentionally, not over spiritualizing things. Not, I mean, it was like, we've got people that are really suffering in the world, like right now here, and you can see them, you know who they are. Here's how we can be in ministry with folks. That was one of the things that I really liked about the seminary. And I found that with each of the professors, each had a kind of a different take on it, but your take on it was the right fit at the right time. And that's the last nice thing I'm going to say about you.
Okay.
I will keep moving on.
Just going to note, I mean, Martha is now an Episcopal priest and one of our alums.
So. She is, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're coming this Sunday, and you're going to be speaking, you're going to be taking the pulpit, and you are going to be touching on a topic. And the title you gave was Lion or Lamb? ? And so I wanted to ask a little bit about why did you choose that? Because I gave you free rein, but you do have some passions and some professional teachings, and you actually have a reputation. I think good, but not for everybody. So what is your reason for this choice?
Yeah, well, you kind of gave me a range of options. And one of them was the book of Revelation, because I work a lot on Revelation, and I have a new book out on Revelation. And when I think about preaching on Revelation, so far, almost every time I've preached on Revelation, I've landed in chapter 5.
Really?
So, yeah, so there's this scene where John is in the throne room with God, and there's a scroll that needs to be opened. It has seven seals. Nobody can open it. Nobody's qualified. Nobody's worthy.
And he's crying about it.
Big tears.
He's weeping.
Literally, I cried big.
Yeah.
And so he's told, oh, look, the Lion of Judah. The lion can open the scroll.
Mm-hmm.
And so he looks, and he doesn't see a lion. He sees a lamb.
Mm-hmm.
So I've thought a lot of things about that passage. Don't want to give away the sermon. But if you think about a book like Revelation that's so confusing, there are so many symbols. I don't want to try to unpack all of them, even though I specialize in the book. It would just, I can't. But here's a case where you see theology being done with symbols. And that's what Revelation's doing. Like, how does God work in the world? Lion, fierce. Lamb, vulnerable.
Right.
What do you do with, you're going to get a lion, but you get a lamb?
Yeah. Yeah. So that scene, you might have given this to me or not. I don't remember. I think of it as like the opening ceremony of the Olympics for some reason. I think it starts in chapter 4.
Right. Very good.
Where he enters into the, he goes up into the room. Mm-hmm. I don't remember how. Ladder, stairs, something.
He's just goes tall, up. Told to come up.
And he comes up.
And
okay.
He goes up.
And so in my mind,
Spirit takes him. Sorry.
It's this massive stadium, but it's dark. And then you see, it's almost like the lights in the stadium slowly turn on from the center going out. I mean, is this the scene where there's this, there's color everywhere?
Yep.
There's a multicolored being at the center on a throne. Mm-hmm. And then there's flatness, but it's like glass, crystal. It's just this hallucinogenic.
Yeah.
Image. And then you have these four beings around. One is like a lion. And then there's three others. And then there's 24.
Like, it's a little crowded up there.
It gets crowded. And so in my mind, it's the lights are going on. It's like, and then you see a little more. And then you see the four. And then you see 24 elders.
I think that's right.
And then it just kind of extends. And then you have the scene you're preaching from in five. And then I think the lights keep going on. It gets bigger and bigger. You get, I mean, there's 200,000 people or something, but if you did the numbers.
There are martyrs under the throne.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it zooms out and you get these choruses of myriads of people singing from.
Myriads of myriads.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then it's just this massive scene. But at the very center of it is this thing that John is watching, and there's a lamb.
Mm-hmm.
And I get goosebumps thinking about it. I also get confused. Oh, I'm sorry. No, never mind. I know exactly how to interpret the scripture.
Oh, cool.
In every way. I'm authoritative. I'm going to put out a book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, about how you interpret this properly. But I will not send it to you because I can imagine the red lines.
No, I would just like to know the book.
Yeah.
I don't usually read books with red.
That's fair. So we've got this scene of a lamb, and without giving up the sermon, have you been able to communicate to people how we find ourselves in this, not necessarily in the scene, because I don't think we're actually in the scene. I don't think we are. But how we find hope, help, insight through this scene, like what it shows us.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Well, one of the great conflicts in our society has to do with how Christians relate to the rest of society, right?
Yeah.
So traditionally, Christians have had a lot of privilege in the United States.
Uh-huh.
That's been true even when not many people were going to church.
Mm-hmm.
Anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
but a lot of privilege. Now there's a movement. It's a large movement. It transcends multiple denominations. Catholics, charismatic Christians who speak in tongues, Reformed Christians who, these are men, they like to wear blazers and smoke cigars and drink whiskey while they do their podcasts. I mean, it's a very vibey kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But in different ways, they all insist that Christianity should be on top of the cultural pile and governing the rest. And so it should be a very masculine, very muscular, they use the language of dominion to talk about Christianity's role in culture. On the other hand, you know, there are a lot of Christians who don't believe, and a lot of people who aren't Christian who don't believe, that one religious group should dominate society. And I'll, you know, transparently, I'm one of those Christians who thinks we've never done well
when we did.
No. Yeah. And you look around the world and the societies where the government sponsors Christianity, or especially a particular stream of Christianity, like a national church, in those cultures, nobody goes to church. Hmm. You get percentages like 6%, 11%, 14%. Hmm. Christianity is extremely unpopular when people have to pay taxes to support the church, for example. Yeah. And yet we have this movement that wants their political agenda to be called Christian and dominate the rest of everybody. I think it really helps to look at the Bible, and particularly the New Testament, for what kinds of images about power and culture we find there.
Yeah. And there's a lot of them throughout that letter. Not just that letter, but throughout that letter.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, that's perfect. Okay. Well, before I let you leave, we want a story. We have decided we want a story.
I have to make it up?
Preferably it's a real story. We have a theme for the podcast right now, which is Shouting from the Rooftops. And it's borrowing from Luke, and I think less so from Matthew, his version of it. And it might be twisting the interpretation a little bit. But there was this idea, if I understand the scripture correctly, Jesus warns his disciples, beware of the Pharisees. That's one of the preceding verses. And then just a little later, he says, what's said in secret will be shouted from the rooftops. And I take that to mean, all right, look, guys, we've been talking about this amazing stuff, but be careful who you're talking to, because what is said, you think you know who they are, but it's going to get out there. Mm-hmm. You can't control it once it is.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think you could read it as, you know, we are going to be shouting this. This is going to be shouted out there. So we took that piece of it. So we're looking for stories of people that are seeing things behind the walls or behind the doors or within the church or what the church is doing, that we wish would be shouted from the rooftops.
As good news.
As good news. As yeah. Good news.
As good news.
As good news. Are you seeing anything?
Yeah. Well, and I'm not trying to pander here.
Sure.
But your church decided to use its space, which huge building,
right,
probably financially burdensome,
mm-hmm,
and you chose to use your building to welcome homeless persons to sleep and stay warm during cold weather months.
Mm-hmm.
Trinity Lutheran down, you know, not down the street, but kind of.
Yeah.
Trinity Lutheran serves breakfast on Sunday morning in the same space where adults.
They do. Yeah.
You know, do education later and invites folks to stay if they want, but certainly doesn't require it. If you if you're hungry in Lancaster County, 21 meals a week, there's a congregation serving that meal hot.
The community meals,
yeah,
that are happening, yeah.
And if you think about that, I mean, this is a way that churches aren't yelling about it, right? But that's a profound thing. And there are many, many criticisms I have about how a lot of Christians behave.
Sure.
And a lot of churches behave. But this is kind of true all over the world, that you're likely to find churches trying to find ways to serve people who need help. To the degree that you're a pastor, how many times, I'm asking you, how many times a week does somebody ring the doorbell?
A lot.
Yeah.
And we get the phone calls too for the shelter.
Yeah.
They have their own phone number, but people will call the church.
And that'd be true even without the shelter.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's not happening at most businesses.
Right.
Right. People still have that expectation. And churches try to deliver on it to the degree that they can. I think that should be shouted from the rooftops.
That's a good one.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
All right. Well, we look forward to you coming. I look forward to you coming. And he's a busy man, so I think we got to let him go. Very good.
Chase and Chris, it's a pleasure.
All right. Listeners, 9:30 a.m., Otterbein Church, Dr. Greg Carey will be here to share something from the Word.
Glad you tuned in today. We look forward to chatting again in the next episode of Hey, Hey, Anybody Listening?